Thank you for being here this evening. Yesterday, we were discussing the idea, the truth of what it really means to be in Vrindavan. In Krishna book written by Srila Prabhupada, he writes how in Vrindavan everyone, everything is focused on giving pleasure to Krishna. When Krishna becomes the center of our life, when pleasing Krishna becomes the purpose of everything we do, wherever we may be in the world, our consciousness is in Vrindavan. And we come on these holy pilgrimages for the purpose of leaving all of the distractions behind in our life, putting aside for some time every other responsibility we may have, to totally immerse ourselves in surrendering our consciousness to Krishna, in the association of devotees, in holy places. We are going to many of these very holy sites where Krishna or his beloved devotees have performed their pastimes. And on this spiritual platform, it is Nitya Lila. They are eternal. They are forever taking place. And they are revealed to us according to the extent in which we absorb ourselves in serving Krishna, in remembering Krishna. We come together for Hari Katha, for Hari Kirtan. We're taking Krishna's holy prasad together. During a yatra, we really have no other purpose except to fix our consciousness in devotional service. And those who are cooking, some of them rise at 2 o'clock every morning. There's a couple hundred people involved in cooking and washing the gigantic pots. Engineers dovetailing their propensities to make railway lines for the pots. Cranes to lift them, all with very simple natural technologies. The spirit is to serve, to be absorbed. Rupa Goswami explained that the nature of a real devotee who is really in contact with Krishna is such a person has no inclination to criticize others. Sometimes, as a tremendous austerity, a person may have to point out certain problems in another, as a doctor may point out in a patient, for the purpose of helping, healing, uplifting, or protecting others. But if there is any envy in our heart, if there is any arrogance in our heart, such criticism is a great impediment in our spiritual progress. So when we come to Vrindavan, we want to absorb ourselves simply in hearing about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, and absorbing all of our mind and senses in serving the Dham, the devotees, and the Lord. In other words, to put Krishna in the center. To put Krishna in the center is the easiest thing. But unfortunately, since time immemorial, we have habituated ourselves through many, many births to put ourselves in the center. Somehow or other, we have to move this false ego aside. And when Krishna or his devotees are in this world, sometimes the Lord uses his most beloved devotees as examples to teach the rest of us. Arjuna was Krishna's dear friend. He loved Krishna, and Krishna loved him. But in Kurukshetra, by Krishna's yogamaya potency, he put Arjuna in a state of confusion, bewilderment, because he wanted to speak to the world through Arjuna. Here in Vrindavan, there are many incredible lessons meant for us to really understand what is Krishna consciousness. Jiva Goswami when he was just a little tiny boy, he saw Lord Chaitanya when his father Anupam and his two uncles Rupa and Sanatan met Lord Chaitanya at Ramakeli. He saw his father and he saw his uncles who gave him such love, who he honored and respected and loved more than anything because he was so small. When he saw how they were surrendering with such humility to Lord Chaitanya, how they bowed down, how they were crying, the types of prayers they were offering, it completely transformed his life forever. What great people do, common people follow. And actually, every one of us is expected to be a leader, whoever we are, whatever role we may take. We should be leaders by setting an auspicious example for people to follow. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes tell us that when he was a little boy, his father, would invite a group of sadhus almost every night for prasad. And Srila Prabhupada's mother and father would prepare the prasad and serve the prasad, and they would have little Abhay, Prabhupada's name at the time, helping to serve the prasad. And when Srila Prabhupada saw this, it had a deep effect on him. He said every morning he would hear a little bell ringing, and his mother and father together would be worshiping Radha Govinda, the family deities. They would regularly take him to the Radha Govinda temple, a larger temple which was for their community. And in the evenings, they would be doing this seva. And the only blessing Gaur Mohan Day would ask of these sadhus, please bless my son that he will be a great devotee of Radharani. Now we understand that Srila Prabhupada was a Shaktivesh special soul who came to this world for a divine mission. But still, the lives of great persons are to teach us. And throughout his life, in fact, the Krishna book he dedicated to his father, who gave him this example from his earliest childhood, and who his eternal father, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, brought such a deeper perception of the same principles of pure devotional service, putting Krishna in the center. Rupa Goswami wanted to teach this principle to the world through his most beloved disciple, Sri Jiva Goswami. In the Bhakti Ratnakar, there is a story of how Rupa Goswami was just completing the writing of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And at that time, Sri Ballabha Bhatt came to visit him. Ballabha Bhatt was a very, very dear associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was a profound scholar, a great Paramhamsa Vaishnav, and he was senior to them in age. So out of affection, because in those days, the different groups of Vaishnavas had very, very deep affection for each other and respect. So Ballabha, out of love, he said to Rupa Goswami, after hearing the Mangala Charana of his manuscript, he said, if you like, I will edit this for you. Oh, Rupa Goswami was so happy. He said, yes, you please take this manuscript and you edit it and make it better. While this exchange was happening, Jiva Goswami was fanning Rupa Goswami with some leaves because it was a hot day. And Jiva Goswami went to the river Yamuna, where Ballabhacharya was looking at the manuscript. And Jiva Goswami, he said, what is it that you're editing now? He told him, this is what I'm doing, because you see, according to one's bhava, or one's particular nature of love for Krishna, and according to one's particular perception of service, or from the angle of vision, philosophically we may look at something, there are different ways of understanding the same principles sometimes. One time, one of the most respected scholars of Sanskrit and Hinduism came to meet Srila Prabhupada. He's an American man. He said, "Swamiji, why is it that there are so many contradictions among the great acharyas?" And Srila Prabhupada's answer was quite shaking. He looked at this great professor, PhD, and he said, "There are no contradictions among the great acharyas." That was all. Because when there's a higher vision, we can understand that there are different perceptions and different lessons, and according to time and circumstance and place and particular mood of love, explaining the same principles in different ways. So this is what was happening. Sri Balabhavata was making some adjustments, and Jiva Goswami, he had such deep, profound faith in Rupa Goswami, he didn't want to see anything changed. So he explained very sweetly, very nicely, very respectfully to Balabhavata that actually this is, just leave it as it is. And they got in a discussion about it, and Balabhavatacharya was ecstatic to see the devotion, the chastity, the scholarship of Jiva Goswami, and he got up, he went back to Rupa Goswami, he gave him the manuscript, he said, "Actually, this doesn't need to be edited." Rupa Goswami said, "Why are you saying that?" He said, "Oh, your Jiva, he has already explained to me what you're trying to say, and it's perfect." And then he left. So what Jiva Goswami did was perfect, but Rupa Goswami wanted to make an example for us. He said, "Why did you disturb him? He's a senior person. He wanted to help me. Why are you so proud that you think that you know better? Vrindavan is a place where no one with even a single grain of pride has a right to reside in." Go home. You are not fit to live in Vrindavan. Now, Jiva Goswami was so humble. He didn't defend himself. "Guru Maharaj, I was doing this for you. I was trying to defend your honor." Jiva Goswami, from the very core of his heart, he agreed with what his guru was saying. That yes, I do have pride. I am not fit to live in Vrindavan. And he left. And as he was walking, he was feeling so much deep, deep remorse. And at the same time, he wanted to purify himself. So on the bank of the Yamuna, there is a very holy place called Nandakat. And according to Bhakti Ratnakar, he made a little hut out of leaves, and he lived there. And he was crying out the holy names day and night to rectify his false pride. That was his mood. There was no false pride.
But that's the humility of a saint.
Saintly people consider themselves to be the most fallen because they understand the greatness and the pureness of Krishna through experience. He would just eat. People would give him a little wheat, and he would just put it in some Jamuna water and drink it. That was his diet. He gave up his sleeping. He gave up practically all eating. He was just crying out Krishna's names day and night. And one day, Sanatan Goswami happened to be coming through that area. And the local people said, "Such a Baba we have in our little village. You can't believe all he does is just chant all day, and he's crying in such ecstasy of love." And Sadatran Goswami went to meet him. And he saw that Jiva Goswami, his health was practically nothing because of the way he was living. And Sanatan Goswami went back to Rupa Goswami and told him. And Rupa Goswami came and brought Jiva Goswami. And Rupa Goswami personally, with his own loving heart, nursed Jiva Goswami back to health. As we have expressed many times, we cannot imitate this. And we should not be discouraged when we see the mountains of arrogance and pride in our own hearts, and we see that here's somebody who didn't even have a trace, and he was weeping and crying the holy names out to purify himself. But what we can understand very clearly is this is what our potential is and how to reach that potential. By understanding the gravity of putting Krishna in the center of our life through seva, through service. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a story. There was an extremely wealthy landowner, or zamindar. His name was Subhuti Rai. He owned vast tracts of land, had beautiful homes, so many people were paying taxes to him. He was like a king of a province. And he was very affectionately taking care of people who were helping him. And there was one young Muslim boy who was just a simple boy. And Subhuti Rai took him in and treated him like his own son. And was engaging him in various services and maintaining him. And one time that boy did something, they were digging a lake, and he was doing some things that were actually very dangerous to himself. He was doing it wrong. So Subhuti Rai, you know, gave him a slap with a bush to make sure that this, and in his back, that, you know, this is dangerous. Don't do this again. And the boy understood that he's like my loving father protecting me. But later on, that boy became a nawab, a local king, extremely powerful. And one day his wife saw that mark on his back and said, "Who did this to you?"
I said, Subodhi Rai.
She said, he must be killed.
You are the king now. You must kill this man.
He said, I love him. He loved me. I was like his father. I was like his son. He was like my father. You know, he got a little angry once, but, you know, it's no thing. It's nothing. He was doing it for my own sake. She said, no, you must kill him. He said, I can't do that. So she said, then take away his caste. It's killing without killing.
So he didn't know what to do. And he actually had some sprinkling of water on him. And according to the orthodoxy of the time, he lost his caste. And he was completely rejected. So Subodhi Rai, he went to Varanasi. He went to some Brahmins. He said, how can I restore my social status again?
They said, oh, this is what they did to you? They put contaminated water on you?
Oh, very serious. Only one thing could be done. You take pure ghee. Pure oil from the cow. And you heat it up until it's smoking, large quantity, and then you drink it all. And what will happen is you will die. But because you die with all that pure ghee in you, you will take your next birth and have your social status restored.
This is how ritualistic people can be. So he wanted a second opinion. He went to some other Brahmins and said, this is what they told me. They said, no, 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 it's not such a big thing. Don't worry about it. You don't have to drink boiling ghee. So then he was really confused because everyone's giving him different opinions. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Varanasi just at that time, on his way to Vrindavan. He was staying at the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, taking his prasad at Tapan Mishra's home. And Subodhi Rai approached him and told him about the conflict of all the different opinions. And this was something very important to him. Lord Chaitanya smiled. He said, all you have to do is go to Vrindavan, live in Vrindavan, do seva in Vrindavan, and constantly chant Hare Krishna. Not only will you restore your social status, who cares about that? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. You will attain the ultimate perfection of life. So Subodhi Rai had such faith in that. He left everything, all his wealth, all his security, and he came to Vrindavan. And he purposely did not bring anything with him because he wanted to feel himself completely dependent on Krishna. What he did is he would go into the forest and pick up dry wood that had naturally fallen from the trees. And he would go into the town of Mathura and he would sell that dry wood and get a little bit of money. And with that money, he would serve the devotees of Lord Chaitanya that were coming from distant places. Srila Prabhupada explained that many of Lord Chaitanya's devotees were from Bengal and Odisha. And in Bengal and Odisha, especially in those days when they weren't having importing and exporting, they ate the local food, which was rice. But Vrindavan, the local food is roti, chapati, wheat. And the Bengalis, when they came here, they didn't get any rice, only roti. So most of them would suffer from indigestion. Subhuti Roy, with the money he got from selling the little wood, which was almost nothing, he used all of it to buy rice so that they could have nice rice. And he would also get dahi or yogurt from the cows of Vrindavan, and he would put medicinal salt and so it would cure their indigestion. And he knew that Bengalis liked to be massaged too, so he would get some oils to massage them. This was his life, to serving the devotees in such a simple way, cooking for them, massaging them, giving them medicine. And most of all, he would take them on tour of the 12 forests of Vrindavan and show them all of the places and give them such a wonderful experience on their pilgrimage. To serve pilgrims is a very, very holy opportunity. Srila Prabhupada said that anyone who comes to our temple, we should understand that they are personally invited by Krishna. They are Krishna's guests. And we're just Krishna's servants. How we should take care of those who are Krishna's guests, that is the consciousness. This is Subhuti Rai's way of living. Anyone who comes to Vrindavan is Radharani and Sri Krishna's special guest. Let me give them a full experience as far as possible to take care of their health. And to show them and give them katas and have kirtans with them and give them nice prasad. There are many stories, Yadubar Prabhu and Vishakha Devi, who are here, they can tell us about the early days in Mayapur Dham. Devotees were becoming very sick from the West. And Srila Prabhupada was so attentive that they had their mosquito nets, that they had proper medicines, that they had properly prepared prasad that would not only sustain them and make them happy, but make them healthy. Very concerned. I was just reading in the book about Yamuna Devi's life, where Srila Prabhupada specially gave her this service. The devotees were coming to Vrindavan and getting so sick, and they were in so much anxieties. So he told Yamuna Devi that I am entrusting you with all of these devotees to make sure they have very nice prasad, that they have proper medicines when they're ill, that they have proper accommodations. They could be very simple, but proper and clean. You see, for Srila Prabhupada, this caring for devotees was most sacred. Because each and every one of these devotees gave their lives for him. And Srila Prabhupada gave his life for them. This is what we should understand when we approach service to the devotees. Sri Rupa Goswami came to Vrindavan. When he first arrived at Mathura, at Dhruva Ghat, Subhuti Rai met with him. And Subhuti Rai arranged prasad for him and took him on a parikrama through all the 12 forests of Sri Brajbhumi. And how Rupa Goswami was so pleased. What a deep, loving relationship they had at that time. And when Sri Rupa Goswami left Vrindavan to go back to Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami went by the way of the Yamuna and the Ganga. And Sanatana Goswami was coming to Vrindavan by the main road. So they crossed without meeting. And when Sanatana Goswami arrived, who greeted him? Subhuti Rai. There to serve him in every possible way. This story of Subhuti Rai and how he attained perfection, always chanting Hare Krishna and serving the devotees in this holy place, gives us a glimpse into how much he valued these simple opportunities. To be in Vrindavan, to serve devotees, to chant the holy names. It's very simple. But he left an estate worth tens and millions of dollars, fine clothes, fine food, because he had such an appreciation for the value of devotional service. Lord Shiva, Mahadev, he wanted to enter the rasa dance. So he came. But in the perimeter of the rasa dance, Sri Radharani's closest associates, Lalita Sakhi and Vishakha Sakhi, they said, you cannot enter because you don't have the right mood of love. In order to have this love, you should go to Mansarovar and take your bath. And as you're taking your bath, you should be praying for the selfless, unconditional, loving mood of the gopis. Mansarovar, I think many of you will be going there during this yatra. It's just across the Yamuna from Keshi Ghat, a couple kilometers down. And when Sri Radharani was in separation from Lord Sri Krishna, she went to that place. And her tears of love in separation, filled up that lake, Mansarovar. So the great destroyer of the universes, went there with all humility because he understood the glory, the greatness of Vrindavan. Who are the gopis? By social standards, they're very simple milkmaids. They don't have lots of money. They don't have big educations. Some of them are taking care of children. Some of them are milking cows. They're making garlands. They're doing the very things that almost anybody could do. But they're doing it with love, with the purest, deepest, selfless love. Srila Prabhupada quotes Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, where he explains how Sri Radharani, she is experiencing the full love of Krishna. And she's like a creeper. And the gopis are like little flowers on that creeper. Each of the flowers, all of Krishna's love, all of Sri Radha's love are coming into each one of these flowers. Shukadev Goswami, the greatest of renunciates, way beyond Brahman realization, he exalted the gopis' love as the highest perfection of samadhi, as did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahadev, Lord Shiva, wanted to serve as a gopi. He understood that this is a limitlessly more exalted position than even being Brahma, the creator of everything, or Shiva, the creator, maintainer, destroyer of everything. His Shakti is controlling the universe. And the gopis, by just making little garlands, they're controlling Krishna. When he bathed in the tears of Sri Radha with this prayer, he actually came out from the water of Mansarovar with the love and the body of gopi. And he came to the rasa dance. And there Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna greeted him. And they could see he was Shiva, with the body of a gopi, with the bhava of a gopi. And Krishna was so happy. And when he explained the whole situation to Sri Radha, she was so happy. And they entrusted him an eternal service, where he would be guard of the Ras Leela. And nobody could enter without his blessings and permission. This story was such an important part of Vrindavan's culture that Krishna's great-grandson, Vajranab, from Krishna and Rukmini was Pradyumna. Pradyumna's son was Aniruddha. Aniruddha's son was Vajra. And when Parikshit Maharaj was king, he appointed Vajranab, Krishna's great-grandson, to be the local king of Brajbhumi, or Vrindavan, with the special purpose of establishing Krishna's places here. Because he knew everything. His mother, his grandmother, his father, they told him so many beautiful things, and Krishna was revealing all of these things to him when he was here. So he personally manifested many deities. In the Vrindavan area, Madan Mohan, Radha Gopinath, and the predominating deity Radha Govinda. In Gokul, he established the Daoji, Shri Balaramji. In Mathura, Keshav. At Govardhan, Haridev. And he established various deities, Srinathji, on top of Govardhan Hill, Brinda Devi, Yogamaya, Pataleshwari, and in this little town of Vrindavan where we are, he personally established Gopeshwar Mahadev and established a temple which is still here today. Hopefully you will all go there. At the very place where Lord Shiva is eternally in the mood of a gopi, assisting Shri Shri Radharani and Krishna's Raslila. This is what Vrindavan is. Lord Brahma, his lifetime is 311 trillion years. He's the father of everyone within this particular universe. In Brahma Loka, there's never a disturbance, never a problem that ever happens. It's the highest planet within this entire universal creation. He's the original receiver of knowledge from Krishna. He's the original guru of the universe. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye Mugyanti Yatsuraya. Yet Brahma, at Brahma Kund, where you will be going, he offered prayers to Krishna. After he completely humbled himself before Krishna, he actually had a vision of Vrindavan. Everything he was seeing before, he was now seeing with completely different eyes. Now he's Brahma. He has 8 eyes. And those eyes are, they could see anywhere in the universe. He was seeing the trees and the mountains and the landscape and the cows. But after Krishna performed his Brahma Vimohan Leela, which we will speak another night, he became so humble. He actually understood who is Krishna. He actually understood the value of this little cowherd boy. Because Krishna seemed just so simple and ordinary. At that time, he wasn't even big enough to take care of cows. He just had the calves. And he was playing with his friends and joking with his friends. So Brahma tested him. Because even he was bewildered. Because Krishna just seemed so ordinary.
He made himself so accessible. Brahma's looking. This is the supreme absolute truth. Brahma's father, the cause of all causes, the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of everything. Parameshwar, Yajna Purusha. And here he saw Krishna sitting on bank of Yamuna with his little friends, and they were all eating their prasad. They all had their little packets of prasad brought from home. And one would say, oh Krishna, this is very, very nice. And he'd take a bite out of it and said, try it. Take it out of their mouth and give it to Krishna. And Krishna would take it from a cowherd boy's mouth. And he'd eat it and he'd say, oh, this is very, very good, very, very good. And then he would eat something and say, you try this. And Brahma's thinking, this is Yajna Purusha? The demigods? The demigods with folded hands? The most powerful living beings who are controlling the whole universe? They are approaching the Lord and offering the Samaveda, prayers of great reverence before him. And after years and years of offering these prayers, then the Lord comes majestically and blesses them. And these little cowherd boys, they're jumping on his shoulders and they're wrestling with him, and he's jumping on their shoulders and wrestling with them, and they're pretending to be frogs together. One little gopa would say, look at Krishna, and he'd show a frog. And the frog would go, doo, doo, jump. And the little boy would pretend he was a frog and jump, jump. And then Krishna would go next to his friend and doo, jump just like a little frog. And he did it so much like a frog. Ultimately, Krishna creates the frogs. Ultimately, not only Krishna says in Gita, I am the ability in man, he's also the ability in frogs. He's the ability in everything. Krishna gives every bird the power to fly. Krishna gives all these little lizards and spiders and insects the mystical power of walking up walls. He gives the power of the monkeys to jump from one branch to the next. But in Vrindavan, he's studying the frog, and he's jumping, jumping. And Brahma's seeing this. This is my Lord. let me check this out. So he took all the calves and he took all the cowherd boys for 1 year. And then he said, you know, let me see what effect I have had on them. And when he returned, everything was completely normal. All the cows and, I mean, all the calves and all the boys were just doing everything. He didn't realize Krishna manifested as each and every one of them. What happened? How does it? He would check to see in a cave. He put them all to sleep. They were still there. He came back and they were here. He went there and they were there. Is Krishna, you know, within a second taking them from here and putting them there, or taking? He was really bewildered. And then every calf and every boy manifested a form of Narayan, the supreme, majestic Lord of all existence. And around every Narayan, and there were millions of Narayans, and around each one were all the demigods and all the rishis and all the sages worshiping them. Then he was really bewildered. He couldn't even move. He was like a statue. When it came to such a point
Krishna understood. He fulfilled his purpose of transforming Brahma. Then everything disappeared, and all that was left was Gopal standing with a lump of yogurt and fruit salad in his hand, just very innocently looking, where is my calves? Where is my friends? Brahma completely humbled himself. Brahma, for the first time, understood the sweetness of Krishna is infinitely greater than his majestic power, because it facilitates the deepest love. And Vrindavan is the place where Krishna facilitates that love. When he completely humbled himself with gratitude, then his vision of Vrindavan was transformed. He saw every tree as a kalpa vriksha. He saw every particle of dust as chintamani, more valuable than all the jewels of the heavenly worlds of his Brahmaloka or even Vaikuntha. He saw each cow as a kamadenu, a wish-fulfilling cow. He saw everything as the spiritual world. The apparently most ordinary things, that is what Vrindavan composes of, he was able to actually understand how totally saturated with love, with prem, with bhav, every particle of Vrindavan was. He wept, he cried in ecstasy. And he went and surrendered by placing his heads at the feet of Krishna. And he prayed. He prayed, let me be a mountain in your Vrindavan, where you and Sri Radharani and your gopas and your gopis and all your devotees and your cows and your peacocks and your monkeys and all of your devotees, let me serve in such a way that everyone is on my head. Let the mountains be my heads. And Bharasana is actually Lord Brahma. Those four mountains, Mangar, Vilasgar, Brishabhanu's palace, Kushal Bihari temple, these four places are the four heads of Brahma. Now somebody may think, how is that possible? For Brahma, everything is possible. But most of all, it's not just how it is possible. The real question is, why is it? Why is it possible? Because Lord Brahma considered to take such a humble role of just having the feet of all of the devotees of Krishna, every bird, every animal, every person, on his head, so he could actually facilitate their pastimes by being nice mountains to play on and have loving exchanges. Was a greater aspiration than being the Lord of the universe. That is how he appreciated Vrindavan. And we are given these stories so that we could actually get a glimpse of how to appreciate the value of Sri Vrindavan Dham, the value of pure bhakti, pure devotional service. A beautiful story is coming to my mind from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which very much reveals the essence, learning how to appreciate the essence of what life is for. Because the human tendency on every level is to take things cheaply. And part of taking things cheaply is when we're giving something very precious, where only deep humility can have access. We become so attached to the external forms which are supposed to make us humble. And we put so much of our life and our energy into doing them well that we become extraordinarily arrogant about how we're doing it. Does that make sense? Ritual. People in the world today, sometimes they're disgusted with religious rituals, because oftentimes they're done in such a superstitious way. People don't even know why they're doing it. And oftentimes the rituals, instead of unifying people, divides people. Because your ritual is different than my ritual. And I'm better than you, therefore my religion is better than yours, and my ritual is better than yours. And even if we have the same religion and the same ritual, look at how I am doing it. The ritual is an envelope. The purpose of an envelope is not to be a nice envelope. The purpose of an envelope is a way to send a message. What's within the envelope is all important, the content. And that's where Srila Prabhupada emphasizes, and all the great acharyas emphasize, our intent is what is all important. The purpose. When we have a humble and grateful heart, then our purpose to serve Krishna and take ourselves out of the center becomes the reality of our life. So it was a summer day, very hot, and Krishna was with his cows. They were roaming through the forests and the pastures of Vrindavan. And they were coming toward the Yamuna River. And Krishna, he spoke to his friends. O Subal, Sridhama, Stopa Krishna, Bhadrasena, just see how the trees, they do not refuse anyone. They are always eager to render service. He spoke a beautiful verse that the duty of every living being is, as far as possible, to offer welfare to other living beings through our life, through our wealth, through our intelligence, and through all of our skills. And just see how these trees, when it is summertime, they are standing in the sun and giving us shade. When it starts to pour rain, they will stand in the rain, and if we take shelter of the tree will keep us perfectly dry. The trees are giving beautiful flowers and beautiful fruits for us. They're giving their wood so we could perform yajna to please the Lord and make great progress in our life. They're giving us wood for our furniture, for our homes, and they ask nothing in return. Trees represent selfless service, giving of oneself for the welfare of others. And Krishna emphasized, this is Dharma, to live for the welfare of other living beings without selfishness. And according to the commentators of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna was speaking this way because he had something in mind. After passing through the trees, they came to the river Yamuna, and the cows, they drank. It was very cool, crystal clear, sparkling water that tasted like nectar. Now, on the external level, Yamuna is not like that. But actually, if we have the eyes to see, when we look at the Yamuna, even the way we may see what we see, in our hearts, we're actually seeing, this is what the Yamuna actually is. The Yamuna is descended from the spiritual world. It's not a river of this world. The cows drank from the river, the boys drank from the river, and very happily they went into a forest of Ashok trees. Now it was getting late in the day, and Krishna and the cowherd boys had wandered into an area where they usually didn't go. So Yashoda Mai and the other gopis, they actually didn't know where to send prasad for them. The boys were thinking, Krishna and Balaram must be hungry. And this is the nature of love. The boys knew that Krishna's love is such that he's only concerned for us. And our love is such that we're only concerned for him. Krishna must be hungry, so somehow we have to get food for him. So they feigned to be extremely hungry. And, oh Rama, oh Balaram, oh Krishna, they said, Your name is Dushta
Nibarhana, which means you are the destroyer of all bad things.
Well, we are so hungry. Please destroy the hunger in our stomachs, because this is a very bad thing. The hunger in our stomachs, it feels like the venom of a serpent. It's causing us so much distress. Please tell us how we could find some food. They only wanted Krishna to have food, but they knew that the only way Krishna would take it seriously is if he was doing it for them.
Krishna told that not far from here, there are some Brahmins who are performing a yajna, a sacrifice, called the Angidas. And it's an auspicious time for them to give some food and charity. So go and ask in the name of Balaram and me for some food from them. So the boys, they hurried to where the yajna was. And oh, what an elaborate yajna it was. There were fires burning and incense, and there was sandalwood, and there was beautiful garlands and flowers, and they had vessels made out of gold and silver and copper and beautiful color powders. And they were chanting hymns from the Samaveda with great, great force. And the boys, they offered their prostrated obeisances to the Brahmins, then stood up with folded hands and prayed. They addressed the Brahmins, O lords of the earth. We know that you are very kind and very charitable, and you are doing this very, very important yajna for the welfare of the earth and to attain the heavenly planets. Very close by is Krishna and Balaram, and they're very hungry. Please give us some food. You have so much food all around here. You've made so much preparations. And at this particular time in your yajna, it's very auspicious to give food and charity. So please give it to us.
The Brahmins were so immersed in their ritual, and they considered it so important, and they considered themselves so important because they were the priests who were conducting it. They heard the boys, they saw the boys, and totally ignored them. We have more important things to do.
They were just cowherd boys. They're just children, covered with dust and decorated with all kinds of feathers and flowers and leaves. We are Brahmins. We are chanting Vedic hymns. We are doing rituals.
They just carried on. And the boys were standing. And they felt very, very brokenhearted. For two reasons. Even if the Brahmins were to say no to them, at least they acknowledged that they existed. But they ignored them. It's a painful insult. But mostly, they were there on behalf of Krishna.
All these yajnas are ultimately only meant for Krishna's pleasure.
So they were very hurt. And they ran back and they expressed to Krishna what happened. And when Krishna saw his distress, he smiled and explained that this is human behavior.
people get caught up in what they're doing like this? These Brahmins are so arrogant. They are so obsessed with getting something for themselves through all of their religious activities that they've missed the very purpose of why these activities are given to them. In the Gita, Krishna tells, Vedaischa sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Everything in the Vedas, every philosophy, every teaching, every logical explanation, all the rituals, all the yajnas, all the prescribed duties, samsadir haritoshana. They're only there to please Krishna. They're only there to help us to humble ourselves before God. Krishna said, please understand, when you're a beggar, sometimes people give and sometimes people don't give. You shouldn't be attached. Isn't it interesting that Krishna sent his little boys to be beggars and frustrated their attempts? And Krishna, he said, now go to the wives of these Brahmins. They are deeply affectionate to me. They will give you everything they have for my pleasure. So the boys, they went to the homes where the Brahmins' wives were sitting. Krishna told them to go to these Brahmins' wives. And the boys with folded palms bowed down because they looked so majestic. Because this yajna was going on, they were sitting on very fine seats with fine clothes and beautiful ornaments. And the little cowherd boy said that Krishna and Balaram, and before they could even give the message, as soon as these Brahmins' wives heard the names Krishna and Balaram, something amazing happened. They swooned. They began to faint. Their entire bodies became numb. Tears flooded from their eyes. Every limb of their body was erupting with bumps of ecstasy. And right before the cowherd boy's eyes, they saw the beauty of these ladies increasing and increasing and increasing. Everything they lived for, everything they prayed for, everything they longed for was now about to be realized. The boys were perplexed. These Brahmins' wives, the Yajnapatnis, they had never seen Krishna. When they would go to the marketplace to get things for their homes, because they were mothers, sometimes the Brijabasi ladies who would sell flowers or sell fruits, they would talk about Krishna. In fact, that's all they talked about was Krishna. And these ladies who were Yajnapatnis from the highest status of society as Brahmins,
when they met these simple little village ladies from Vrindavan, and they heard them talking about Krishna's beautiful form, the sweetness of his loving exchanges with his devotees, his pastimes, his love for his cows and his calves, his mother's love for him, his love for his mother and his father. When they would hear about the exchanges of Vrindavan and the beauty of Krishna, they were totally enchanted, mesmerized. They surrendered their hearts in love to Krishna. And it's not that they were sitting in Hari Katha like we are, where there's formal narrations taking place. They were just shopping, hearing these ladies more or less gossiping with one another about Krishna. And when they came home to their families, 24 hours a day, they were just yearning, longing. When will I meet Krishna? Will I ever meet Krishna? They lived for, they prayed for, they yearned for that moment to meet Krishna. And Krishna, who is in the heart of every living being, Saravasya Chaham Hridi Shani Vishnu, he understood and he was reciprocating with them. The boys were thinking, who are these? They never saw Krishna. They don't know Krishna. But just by hearing his name, they are completely in ecstasy. Their physical and emotional state is totally transforming. The boys didn't know what to do except continue the message. They said, Krishna Balaram, they're close by in a forest and they're very hungry. Please bring them some food. They sent us. The Yajnapatnis. It was the moment of the life that they yearned for. Lolyam, this eagerness, this crying to serve, this crying to love, this crying to be with Krishna. Rupa Goswami explains, this is the price of love for Krishna. The yearning to love. The Yajnapatnis, simply by hearing while they were shopping these beautiful narrations, their yearning to be with Krishna, like a blazing fire, literally burned away every misconception, every tinge of ego, and every attachment to the world. Instantly, they brought the very, very best foods that were prepared for the yajna. And instantly, they were preparing the best foods that they knew how to make within moments and putting them on nice trays and beautiful vessels and left their homes, their husbands, their fathers, some of their sons, daughters. They forbid them from going. Because you see these yajnas, it takes sometimes weeks or months of preparation to do it. And they were needed there. But they left. Because Krishna was calling for them. They wandered through the forests. And as they came into that Ashok forest near the banks of the Yamuna, they happened to see through the trees Krishna with his cowherd boys roaming about. And then they came to the clearing. Now they were holding they were taking as much possible of the prasad as they could, the bhoga. They were walking a long distance. It was heavy. And in the forest, there's so many dangers. But they did not experience any inconvenience. Param drisvani vartate. They could pass through every obstacle. They could pass through every pain. They could pass through all the insults of the people that were their own loving relatives because of their eagerness to serve. Then they saw before their eyes the first true darshan of Krishna. He was standing, gazing upon them, each and every one of them. Each of these yajnapatnis could see Krishna gazing only at her. His complexion was the very summum bonum, complete essence of all beauty. It was the hue of a newly formed monsoon rain cloud. And the cloth that he was wearing was brilliant, yellow like lightning. He had a peacock feather adorning his hair. And there were beautiful flowers, little flowers of all different colors also decorating his hair. The limbs of his body were ornamented with natural minerals from the ground of Vrindavan that his friends would put on him, and the sandalwood pulp that his mother Yashoda Mai put on him. He had a long garland of natural forest flowers and leaves that extended below his knees. There were lovely lilies hanging over his ears. And his left hand was leaning on the shoulder of one of his friends, Subal. And his right hand was twirling a lotus flower. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives us a deeper insight into the twirling of the lotus flower. Because whatever Krishna does has infinite meaning. Krishna was speaking silently to the Brahmins' wives that this lotus flower is your heart, and it is now in my hand, and I'm twirling it around. And due to your love, my heart is now twirling around like this lotus flower. As the yajnapatnis looked upon Krishna, they saw his beautiful hair, which is like black silk, was curling around his lovely moon-like face and his cheeks. And his lotus-like eyes were gazing with such affection upon them. Krishna was smiling. The very essence of Krishna's beauty is his smile. The Yajnapatnis standing, holding the offerings, having the first darshan of Krishna. Yegata mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. For many years, they were meditating on Krishna. Even when they were young, much younger, they would hear the stories of Krishna in the marketplace. They were yearning, and yearning with the desire to serve and to love. And now Krishna was reciprocating with their love by revealing himself, smiling upon them in such a way that their hearts were conquered. Through the doors of their eyes, they brought Krishna inside and placed him on a lotus bed that was their hearts. And there, Krishna, who actually entered the form that they were seeing in front of their eyes, entered just as he was through their eyes into the lotus of their heart. And there he embraced them, and they embraced him. And all of the distress was relieved. Srimad Bhagavatam compares it to when a great yogi realizes his eternal self, then he is eternally free from all the distress of the ahankar, or the false ego of I, me, and mine. The perfection of all their desires. Their body, their mind, their words, their life, they offer to Krishna in love, and Krishna offered himself in love for them. And this was all going on in their hearts as they were standing, holding the plates and jugs of food. Krishna smiling upon them, he invited them, please sit down and be comfortable. Be happy. I am so glad that you have come to the forest to give me this food. Actually, what you've done is perfect. Because all of the great sages and scriptures teach us that the very perfection of life is to serve me with unmotivated, uninterrupted love. That's the true happiness of the self. We have our mothers and our fathers and our husbands and our wives and our children and our friends and all of these different people, but what is most dear is the self. Because if we don't have life, we have no power to love. And I am the Paramatma. I am Atma Priya. I am the beloved of the self. It is my presence in the heart of all living beings that enables us to love them. It is my presence in your heart that empowers you to love, and my presence in other heart that is the object of love. So please, put down the food that you have brought, and now you should go home. The Yajnapatnis, they did not want to go home. They were shocked. Sarvadharman parityajya mame kam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masucha. Krishna tells in Gita, abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. I will protect you. Do not fear. The Yajnapatnis, they surrendered everything. And now Krishna was sending them home. So graciously and desperately, they offered their appeal to Krishna. Yegatam ampapatyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. That you say that according to how one surrenders to you, you reciprocate accordingly. We have sacrificed, surrendered, abandon everything for you. All we want is you. We don't want anything but to serve you and to love you. We've longed for this moment our whole life. It's not becoming of you to send us back home. Apramabhuvana loka punaravartun arjuna mamupetitu kontiya punarjanmana vidyate. Krishna says in Gita, from the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, they're all places of misery. But one who comes to me never takes birth in this material world again. To one who comes to me, I save them from ever coming back to the sufferings of this world. We have come to you. Why are you sending us back to this material world where there's nothing but suffering and forgetful in separation from you? As Lord Rama, you gave a promise. When Vibhishan came to surrender to you, Vibhishan is the brother of Ravana, who stole Sita, who was your arch enemy. The monkeys wanted to chase him away. But at that time you spoke that everyone here, this is my solemn vow, that anyone who even one time says, oh my Lord, today I am yours. Even if Ravana himself were to say sincerely, my Lord, today I am yours, I will give that person my protection for the rest of eternity. We are yours. Protect us. Why are you sending us away? When a river rushes out from a mountain cave, the river can't go back into the mountain cave. It must naturally complete its course of flowing toward the ocean. We have left everything of this world only to be here with you. We cannot go back. If a person is born blind and lives his whole life without vision and then miraculously is given perfect vision to see everything, can that blind man reject his good fortune
and lose his vision to be blind again?
Is that what you're asking us to do? We have been in darkness, in blindness, and now in your presence, we are in the light of your grace. We cannot go back. Our relatives, our husbands, they've rejected us for our surrender to you. Let us stay. Their words, which were sincere and spoken with deep love, affected Krishna's heart. And Krishna replied, I have accepted your love. I am forever indebted to you. But please know that one does not attain love for me simply by physical proximity. Real love for me is realized through hearing about me, worshiping my form of a deity, through meditating upon me and chanting my names and glories. Through this path of always remembering me, meditating on my beautiful form that you have seen, hearing my names and glories, worshiping me, and chanting my names, we will always be together. I will never be apart from you. This is the true way for all beings to attain love for me. There's a famous story of Srila Prabhupada where devotees were telling how much they so much wanted to be physically close to him. Although he was sending them so many places and sometimes they were hardly seeing them. Srila Prabhupada said, who is the closest person to me physically at this moment? Nobody said anything. And Srila Prabhupada pointed to a fly that was swarming around him. In fact, he was right on top of him. He said, he is closest to me physically, but he's simply causing me disturbance. Same principle that Krishna told the Yajnapatnis. Actual devotion, love, is manifested not through physical proximity, but through seva. Do not try to see Krishna, but serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna is pleased to see you. Krishna spoke these words to the Yajnapatnis with such compassion, with such concern, with such love. They had complete faith. They became ecstatically happy. They offered all the food to Krishna and then they returned to their homes. But as they were leaving, they had already took that beautiful presence of Krishna that was in front of their eyes and brought him so deep in their hearts. And he never left them there. When they returned home,
her husbands saw
their effulgence.
Their husbands saw that they were transcendental, supernaturally intoxicated with ecstasy. Their husbands saw that they had attained the ultimate samadhi of prema bhakti. And they looked at their wives with total awe and reverence. The Yajnapatnis explained to one other of their friends about what they had seen. This particular Yajnapatni was forcibly prevented from going. And she was in such a state, she was literally a prisoner in her own house, yearning for Krishna. All the others left to go offer him seva, the chance of a lifetime. It may never come again. She was in such a deep state of separation that she closed her eyes. Upon hearing the other Yajnapatni's explanation, and took Krishna so deep in her heart, and Krishna appeared in her heart and embraced her. And her physical, material body passed away. And instantly, her spiritual body, Krishna brought it into the association of the gopis. And the gopis taught her how to personally render loving service to Krishna in the forest. That was the perfection that she attained. The Yajnapatnis told Krishna, when they were begging to remain, that we don't want to be an impediment for you. Because we're Brahmins' wives, it may be socially unacceptable for you, who's just a cowherd boy, to be accepting our services in public. So we won't go in the village with you. We will live the rest of our lives in the forest, and we'll sweep the forest paths for you, and we'll collect the flowers for you, and the tulsi leaves that fall from your feet, we will collect them as your servants. That was the spirit of their devotion. Their husbands, they realized that they were ignorant fools. And they began to condemn themselves. The very purpose of all Brahminical activities, all philosophy, all knowledge of Vedas, all scriptures, is only to please Krishna. And we had the opportunity to directly, personally please him. He sent his friends. And we neglected them. We ignored them. We hurt their hearts. Because we were so intoxicated with these rituals. The hell with our being Brahmins. Our first birth to our parents. Our second birth, Brahminical initiation. Our third birth, initiation into the performance of Vedic sacrifices. To hell with our being, have been brahmacharis in the school of our gurus for so many years. Our wives never did that. To hell with all of our knowledge of slokas and mantras, tantras, yantras, mujas, pujas, and all of our great learning. Our wives don't know any of that.
The hell with our hundreds and hundreds of followers who will do anything we say. We are their teachers. We are their spiritual masters.
Our wives don't have any followers.
The hell with our execution of the most complicated, intricate rituals and knowing expertly the time, the place, and how to do everything.
Our wives don't do that either. But they pleased Krishna, and we didn't. We are fools. From that point on, the Brahmins accepted their wives as their spiritual masters, their gurus, for the rest of their lives.
They no longer thought, this is my wife, or this is my daughter.
They saw, this is a Paramhamsa liberated devotee of Krishna, who is my guru. Shukadev Goswami, he ends this chapter by telling how the Brahmins could have gone to where Krishna was. After learning all of this, but they knew that Kamsa had spies everywhere. And if Kamsa found out that these Brahmins had gone to surrender to Krishna, Kamsa would have killed them. Out of fear of Kamsa, they did not go. But the Yajnapatnis, they had no fear of Kamsa. They had no fear of anything. Because they had love. Vajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya Charanara Vindare. Govinda Das prays that my dear mind, please worship the divine son of Nanda, Sri Nanda Nandana. Always remember him. Because in doing so, one becomes fearless. In this world, perhaps the most powerful emotional influence is fear. We fear hunger. We fear losing money. We fear losing our loved ones. We fear losing our health. We fear death. We fear earthquakes. We fear enemy nations with nuclear bombs. We fear mosquitoes. There's unlimited fears that are in all of our lives. Bajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhay Charanadavindare. Even the greatest military heroes that run into battle and willing to risk their lives and even die for their country, they are not without fear. They have a higher cause that they're willing to die for. But the highest cause to live for and to die for, the highest cause that transcends all fear, is prema. Prema is the heart's love for Krishna. Kamala dala jala jivana tala mala bhaja hun hari padani thire. Govinda Das tells that one's health, wealth, loved ones, skills, acquisitions, whatever it may be, they are like drops of water on a lotus leaf. At any moment, it will slip away, gone forever. That is the nature of all the things that we're holding on to in this world. And to the degree we have attachments, to that degree we have fear. To be fearless means to be detached. To be truly detached means to be completely attached to Krishna. Because when we attach ourselves to Krishna's beauty, Krishna's sweetness, Krishna's love, that love is infinite and it is forever. Once we connect to it, we can never lose it. Wherever we may be, in any situation. Krishna then took all the food that the Yajnapatnis brought and served it. Krishna and Balaram themselves served it to all their friends. And the friends wanted Krishna to eat. But Krishna wanted the friends to eat. And just to please Krishna, they all ate. Because they knew that it will give Krishna more pleasure for us to eat than to him eat. And that's why they ate. And then they served Krishna, and Krishna ate. And what were they tasting? Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water with devotion, and I will accept it. Krishna was tasting the love of the Yajnapatnis, and he was sharing that love with all of his friends. This is one of the great glories of Vaishnav history. How Krishna loves to share the love of his devotees with others. This is Vrindavan. And coming for this yatra, this is actually our purpose. Whatever inconveniences, whatever austerities, or whatever blissful moments, let us keep seeking the essence. What is that essence? Pleasing Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to reach that essence. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Das 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 Anudas. To be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Narottam Das Thakur, that great scholar, we heard yesterday how he was seeking that essence. Subhudi Rai, this great millionaire, We heard today how he was seeking that essence. The Yajnapatnis, we heard how they were seeking this essence. What is the essence? To serve, to give pleasure to Krishna. And what gives pleasure to Krishna? When we serve those who he loves. Vaishnava seva is the ultimate benediction that Krishna gives us. And jivadoya, sharing the great gift of bhakti that we have received with as many people as possible. Out of respect and compassion for them as Krishna's children who have forgotten. When there's Vaishnava seva and when there's jivadoya, and we really appreciate these principles, then we are really in a state of mind where Krishna will reveal himself to us as we cry out his holy name. Thank you very much. Thank you.